Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome back to Wine Times, brought to you in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club, with me, comedian and wine novice Susie Ruffle.
And me, Will Lyons, the Sunday Times wine columnist and vice president of the Sunday Times Wine Club.
Throughout this series, we'll be joined by a handful of your favourite celebs for some good wine and some great times.
As always, I'll be sharing my expert wisdom on all things grape related, from the history of vineyards across the globe to the science behind your favourite wines.
And I will take on my favourite role as apprentice of wine, voice of the people, as I inquisitively ask the questions we're all thinking, like, why is it frowned upon to store red wine in the fridge?
Well, Susie, actually, you can actually store...
Will, save it for the podcast. When will he learn? Today, we're sat at the top of News UK's tower, looking out over London with a live audience, ready to sip the wine and, of course, have a good time.
Discussing and decanting with Susie and myself today are broadcasters Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
Yes, Jane and Fee have been chatting on our airways for three decades now with radio shows across the BBC. And earlier this year, they were welcomed onto Times Radio with a shiny new afternoon show wedged in between Mariella Fostrop and John Pina. Not to mention, they are authors of their best-selling book, Did I Say That Out Loud?, and host a daily podcast off-air with Jane and Fee. Luckily for us, they were happy to join us straight from their live Times radio show for a tipple or two. Hello, Fee and Jane.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for asking us.
Yes, thanks for coming down.
It doesn't get better than this, does it?
No,
it doesn't. What are we, Monday night?
Monday night.
Monday night, drinking wine above the news building.
It's very nice, the news.
Monday night club.
It's what we always dreamt of.
Yeah.
All those years toiling at the BBC, what we really wanted to do was sit here and drink wine with a load of nice people on a Monday night.
Absolutely. Now, how long have you two worked together?
Well, that business of decades I could have done without, Susie.
Sorry.
If you don't mind, but although it is decades, we haven't worked together for decades.
Mm.
We were, would you say, how were we put together by the BBC? I think they just needed a couple of middle-aged women to make a podcast. And we were literally just standing there like spare parts.
Those two, that'll do.
Yeah, what about those two? Yeah, they'll be all right. And it was pretty much that, wasn't it?
It was. We hosted the Radio Festival, which is our industry's annual shindig, back in the day up in Salford. And I think we were the first women to ever host the festival. And this was
2013.
And right. It came as an enormous shock to an industry where, you know, bearing in mind half the audience is female, that two women might be vaguely entertaining as hosts. So from vaguely entertaining, I think there was a commissioning editor in the room who thought, oh, they're quite funny doing this, so let's put them together and send them off to do a podcast. But Jane's right, it was very early doors in the podcasting world, and we were a bit canaries down the mine shaft, just so, you know, we'll put them out there, see what happens. And then fortunately just kind of took off, really.
Yeah.
And that's our previous podcast.
Yes.
In our pre-Times life.
Yes, of course that happened, but we don't need to focus on it anymore.
No, we don't. Like, embarrassing uncle, he's gone now, and we're here, yes.
Do you both enjoy a glass of wine?
Well, that's actually slightly, it's not tricky territory. I would like to drink more wine, but I just cannot process it. I'm really sorry, Will. I can have usually one glass and then I'm just about done for.
She really is.
And if it's red wine, I just get a pounding headache after a couple of mouthfuls.
But I write about this a lot in the column.
Do you? Okay.
I'm 46, I've reached middle age, and my palate has definitely changed. Certainly when I was first getting into wine in my 20s,
I did a lot of book learning, and I love the big reds, those power, you know, lots of primary fruit, that supple sort of high alcohol wines. Now I'm much more, I probably drink more white wine than I do red wine. I think your palate changes. But also I think you'll have a lot more responsibility in later life. So as I was saying earlier, I think if you're, you know, if you're really busy, it's nice to sort of wind down with a glass or two, but you can't obviously overdo it like we did in the 20s and 30s, maybe.
I grew up with my grandmother in the home, and she was well into her 80s, and boy, could that woman put it away. And she was about, I think she was about 4'10". You know, she was a minute woman, but she really had drinking boots, and I obviously gave her a great deal of enjoyment, and I want to be her, but I don't feel I'm ever going to be her, actually. I just seem to be the sort of person who just gets really affected by alcohol. And I've been searching my whole life for the drink that I can enjoy that doesn't give me a banging hangover. Can you help me, Will?
It's water.
Is it water? Terrible feeling.
I have to say, even I can't keep up with that generation. My mother-in-law is 84. I stay with her for a week in the summer. And come 12 o'clock, she always is mixing a G&T. And it was a comical moment this summer where the only thing we had in the fridge, I don't know where it came from, it certainly didn't come from me, was a can of Stella. And I walked out and she was, I'm on the Stella, drinking from the can. Because at 12 o'clock, she must have a drink. And then at 6 o'clock, it all happens again. Yeah. And she gets up in the morning.
But do you think it does come, that ability to drink more, do you think it comes back in old age? Are we just passing through a particularly kind of sensitive middle-aged time?
Well, possibly. Why?
Someone's laughing at the notion of us being sensitive.
Yeah. I'm probably not the best person to ask, as someone who drinks probably wine every day.
Yeah.
But I do think as you get older, staying hydrated, and as they do in Italy, drinking wine with the meal is a good idea.
Right.
We, you know, that idea that the Brits tend to drink wine like we drink beer, sort of on its own, in front of the television, I think that's a bad idea.
My first bottle of wine that we used to drink as teenagers I grew up in the suburbs of Liverpool, was a Bulgarian country wine. Does anybody else remember that? It was about £1.70 in 1981. And, you know, you could certainly have a good night on it. but the next day was nothing much to write home about, if I'm honest.
What are we starting with? Well, what are we all starting with tonight?
Everyone got a glass of wine in front of them?
Yes, everyone's got a glass. Okay.
So we're starting in Italy. And we have a wine here that I think, well, I was saying to Jane earlier, you may have heard of it. It's a Garvi di Garvi. So Italian wines are incredibly complex. I think Hugh Johnson said that, you know, trying to understand Italian wine is like mapping the inside of a beehive. But there are certain wines in Italy that we've all heard of, like Suave, Prosecco, Chianti. And I'd probably put Garvi di Garvi in that. So we're in Piemonte.
Thank you.
So northwest Italy, there's a great variety called Cortez. And this had tremendous commercial success in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s. It's known for its sort of citrusy, light...
Oh, it's very fruity.
Yeah, it's fruity and aromatic. I mean, this isn't really a natural wine for a December day when it's freezing cold outside.
Yeah.
This is the first wine of the night when you're on your Tuscan holiday, or your holiday in the south of France. And I just think, you know, you've just had a shower, you've come, you've put on your best, your sort of relaxing clothes, and you've come out for the evening, and you're just going to have a sneaky glass in your room or on the terrace or wherever you are just before supper. And this is the wine you want, really.
I'm in a caftan already, Will. I really am. The view's sensational. It's a slightly kind of dusky evening.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, actually. So would this be a drink that you would happily have without food? You're saying it's a bit more than a
maybe aperitif. A glass. Yeah, yeah, maybe a glass, and then you could...
But you want to know that dinner's on its way?
Yeah.
Mm. Well, we always want to know that.
Soon, yeah, don't we? And we don't want to be cooking it, much more importantly.
Yeah.
Mm. Fee, are you someone to have a glass of wine at home?
So I, a little bit similar to my colleague here, have lost the ability to really drink. I did really used to like a glass of wine, you know, back in my 20s, but that is quite a long time ago now. That's 3 decades ago now. But I've become an enormously big fan of Cava, and I'm interested to see Will's reaction to that, because I think somebody just laughed openly in my face when I said that I like Cava before. Somebody just did it here. And I don't know what to make of that really, Will, because I just enjoy the... I mean, it's I find it a kind of quite a sharp drink, quite enlivening, and you know, a decent glass of that of an evening.
Carver gets such a bad rap.
It does, so doesn't it?
Yeah, why is that? Because I like it too.
Well, it's obviously, let's just rewind it. So it's made in Spain in the same way as champagne. So you have a secondary fermentation in the bottle. So a lot of care and craft goes into making cava. Different grape varieties from champagne. I always think it has more of a savoury, nutty character than champagne. The reason I think, is only my own personal opinion, why it gets a bad rap is because they chase the sort of supermarket crowd in the 80s and 90s, and as soon as you go down that sort of discounting, you can't sort of claw your way back. It's a little like the English sparkling wine industry at the moment, in that English sparkling wine is quite expensive, but I think we need to keep it there, because once you start discounting, it's very hard to sort of then throw off the shackles. People think it's a cheap product.
Well, how much do you pay for a good English sparkling wine?
£35 a bottle.
£35.
£30 to £35.
Right.
But a lot of craft goes into that. You have to grow the grapes and make it have a secondary fermentation. So coming back to your question, yes. Cava is the insider's choice.
Oh, good.
It's had the sort of eat off. I think it's great.
Phewy.
It's a great idea. Yeah. In fact, we had a cava today, didn't we? As you came in, was a cava.
I find it a little less claggy than champagne. And that's a sentence I never really thought I'd say, Will, but I've said it out loud.
I know people like you say it.
I'm pleased I was here to witness it.
Yeah, well, there's lots of different styles of champagne.
Will there be a time in your lifetime when we could do wine?
Well, very good question. We are living through the great English wine boom of the 21st century. We now have around 900 vineyards and 157 wineries. I say that because we have more vineyards in England than we do in Napa Valley, which is incredible.
And are there going to be loads more vineyards popping up around the country?
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. So it started in Sussex. Now we have vineyards in Dorset, Devon, Berkshire, Oxfordshire. And I think the other thing that that's going to be really good in England is wine tourism. Because like champagne grew up around the prosperity of Paris, we still have the world's largest financial centre behind us. And we're incredibly thirsty in this country. I mean, it amazes me. We're the number one market for Prosecco. A couple of years ago, we drank more champagne than the whole of North America. I think they've just reached parity with us now. And it's incredible. We drink a lot of cava. We drink a lot of English sparkling wine. We drink a lot of Cremant.
We know what we're good at.
But if you look at it, you've got things like horse racing, weddings, everywhere. It's just like, open up the bubbly, isn't it?
Should we move on to wine too?
So we are leaving Italy. So we're crossing the Atlantic. And we're going to the sunny state, California.
Now, we've had this one on the podcast before, and it's one of my favourites.
6,000 miles across the Atlantic. Here we are.
Very good.
I think the thing we can all agree on is you can't make any generalisations about California. It's so vast and so different. I was there in March, and I drove up from San Francisco through Napa up to Sonoma. And as you go, you just go through lots of different microclimates. And I think when I got up to Sonoma, is all sort of small homesteads with giant redwoods and green wooded valleys. I stopped at Bodega Bay, where the birds were spotted. But we're in the Central Valley, so we're sort of southwest of Napa and Sonoma, so we're west of San Francisco. We're drinking a Pinot Noir.
What do you think?
I think that's lovely, really lovely, and it smells a bit charcoal-y, doesn't it?
Ooh.
Do you like that?
That tastes good.
Yeah, something that's very good. Would you have that with a big, lovely piece of beef?
I think I probably would.
Yeah.
The fruit here is from an area called Lodi, which is actually one of the breadbaskets of America. I think they grow lots of nuts there, lots of fruit. It's a big agricultural area. And actually, it's famous for Zinfandel, which is a big, pungent red wine. And they only have a little bit of Pinot. But what I love about this Pinot is it's silky, isn't it? As you said, it's got that silky texture and...
Yeah, it's beautiful. Do you like it? Can you
taste it? I think you should have it.
I've had a little mouthful, and I thought it was tremendously full-bodied. I have to say, I couldn't imagine, I know this sounds ludicrous, I couldn't imagine drinking a glass. I would be, I'd be bright red in the face apart from anything else. I don't understand why it seems to impact me in such an over-the-top and dramatic way.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Well, it's probably just an allergy I've got. I just have to accept it.
I mean, you mentioned sulfites. You know, everyone says, oh, it's sulfites in wine that give me a headache. They get a bad rap as well, like Carver, because actually there's more sulfites in a bottle of Robinson's orange juice than there is in wine.
But you dilute that.
Good
point.
You don't get as bad a headache if you're always having spritzers either.
What about mixing drinks? Because I was always told, you know, that if you really want to avoid a hangover, just drink white drinks. That was one of the techniques people. And I think you're obviously able on a not in your working life, but in your social life, to maybe start the evening with a glass of champagne, then maybe have white wine, then maybe have red wine, then maybe drink port. Can you really do that?
Not
seven nights a week,
mix.
But
you know. But without sounding too pious, and I do try and drink responsibly. Where I do fall down, I love drinking with old friends. And I do, and we drink, and we do drink quite a lot. But the key thing is to have it with food, I think, and to drink lots of water, keep hydrated. But with mixing drink, if the wines of I can have a glass of champagne and a white wine and a red wine, that's not really a problem. I think when you go onto the port, then it starts to.
Okay.
Well, then you end up on the Guinness.
God.
Since I've been doing this podcast, my wife has noted that I've got better at drinking. Oh. She's like, do you know what? We've really got something. You've been a lot less drunk when we go out for dinner. So thanks, Will.
Yeah, that's great.
It's really nice, isn't it, to get something else as well as work.
But it's just slowing it down, isn't it? Like if you're in France. And you're having lunch and you're watching that. If you're in Paris and they're pour a glass of Sancerre, and you can bet your bottom dollar that the person on the table next to you will still have that glass of Sancerre virtually at the end of the meal. You know, they drink much more slowly than we do.
We're gulpers, aren't we?
We're gulpers. Mm. And I think, my own personal thing is in France, I think they just drink wine like we drink tea. It's just natural. They have it with every meal and they drink local. Whereas for us, we still get excited, don't we? As you hear the cork pop, there's that Pavlovian response.
You get the straw out. Yeah, the romance.
And then you talk about California, where we're sipping now, and they hardly drink straw there, do they? I mean, that's the other thing.
Yeah, they are very abstemious. Yeah. But they've got other stuff going down, haven't they?
Well,
I was in Napa, I rang the restaurant and said, an early flight tomorrow or late flight, but we want to have a table at 6. Would that be right? Is it too early for you? I said, no, fine. And we went down at 6 and it was packed. And by 8, everyone had left.
Yeah.
And we were still going. I thought we were British alcoholics. During your drinking days, if you can call it that,
my drinking days.
Who was the most famous wine lover you shared a glass with? You must have at the BBC. Sorry, I shouldn't mention them.
We have no fun at the BBC at all.
Well, no, I mean, Fee knows I very recently had dinner, or no, not dinner, lunch, I wish it had been dinner, at the Ritz with Ken Follett.
Ooh.
I know, who's a fabulous writer and incredibly successful. And it was all slightly complicated, date set up by, well, it wasn't a date, Ken's very happily married, I need to make that clear. It was the lunch date.
You heard it here first, someone tweet it.
By a listener to our podcast who had heard me going on about Ken Follett's Thrillers, which became a little bit of a talking point, unfortunately, our previous podcast. And there are all sorts of good things about Ken Follett's books. And there are some quite funny things about the way he describes a woman's breast through time, for example, which Fee and I would occasionally take issue with, and we'd attempt to read out some of his descriptions of bosoms through a woman's lifetime. Anyway.
Back on track.
Yes, back right on track. A listener saw advertised a chance to have lunch with Ken Follett at the Ritz with the money going to charity. And this fantastic woman bid, I think it was £2,000?
I think it was a bit more, actually. And she's called Veronica, isn't she? Veronica, Agent V.
Yeah. She paid an incredible amount of money and couldn't, because I think she lives in Malaysia from memory. So she couldn't have the lunch. So I went in her place and drank the most fabulous champagne with Ken Follett all afternoon at the Ritz.
And that's what you drink, champagne?
If I was going to be honest, my favourite drink, if I'm out for a treat, I would always just have champagne.
Yeah.
I think it goes with everything. Thank you, Will. I mean, if I were to do a podcast, it would just be called "Why You Know Don't Drink, Don't Bother with Wine, Just Drink Champagne." It goes with everything. But I did have a most extraordinary hangover the next day. I wasn't fit for anything. But that's what I enjoy about drinking: is those fabulous lost hours that you can spend in somebody's company. Mm. And Ken was a fantastic companion and just talked a great deal about the inspiration for his books and how he writes them. And, you know, it was really brilliant. So I really enjoyed it.
And I think lunch is ideally suited for that.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Because you feel quite guilty that you're, you know, wasting away the afternoon. Yeah. Well, you're not wasting it.
No, I certainly wasn't wasting it.
Not wasted.
Didn't feel like a waste. Ken enjoyed it so much he missed his hair appointment. Well, actually, I just think he got a tiny bit tipsy and forgot he had a hair appointment. But anyway,
and we got weeks of material.
We got
out of
loads
it.
Of material out of that. So it was well worth it.
This is Wine Times with Susie Ruffle
and Will Lyons.
And we'll be back with more great wine and conversation before you even get the chance to top up your glass.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
We don't get off onto our next glass.
Yeah, should we do that straight away?
And then, before we begin chatting, what have we got next?
So we're going back to Italy.
Good.
We're going to where I think we should always go in a wine tasting. We're going to Tuscany, that wonderful region between Siena and Florence. Anyone's been there, it's magical.
Okay.
And we're having a wine which is, I don't know if anyone's ever heard of Super Tuscans, but essentially the main grape variety in Tuscany is Sangiovese, which makes Chianti, one of the most famous wines in the world. And Sangiovese is a grape that has lots of sort of juicy, spicy character, sort of dried herb aromatics and cherry and red berry flavours. But this is blended with a little bit of Merlot, just to temper it. And it's always a very popular wine, this, I think. This is the Saracosa Governo. So part of the grapes were left to dry, and this is to get more concentrated. That gives it that sort of character.
Does that make them more sugary?
Yeah, and more fruit. And I mean, I think with Italy, you've got to start thinking about food. So we have to imagine we're having this with either crostini, small slices of bread with cheese and meats, or, I mean, wild boar, but who eats wild boar? Any game.
Actually, can I just put my hand up? I went to Lake Como on holiday a couple of years ago, and I had probably the greatest meal of my life. I had wild boar risotto one evening.
Oh, yes.
And I live with a couple of, one vegan child and a vegetarian. So when I'm out, I just go mad for meat in this crazy carnivorous fashion. And I still think sometimes about that risotto.
I remember, I mean, in Italy they do risotto so well.
Oh, my God. It was just unctuous and I just can't begin to do justice to it. I don't have the words. Do you have the words?
No, they're your words.
You weren't there, actually. So how could you know? But
I think you should grapple with some wild boar in your local east-west Kensington vicinity. Bring them down, Jane.
Wrestle with a wild boar. Okay, I'll see what I can do.
It's a beefy one, this.
Yeah.
I quite like that one, actually. I can imagine eating that with a really good, strong blue cheese of some sort.
I also wrote down chickpea soup with olive oil, if you're in the sort of, you don't like
that. I'm not getting that.
No, there's no need for that.
I mean, that's a bit too far even for me.
Thinking about risotto, we did a cook-along during lockdown, one of the lockdowns, with a celebrity chef. Can't remember who it was, actually. But all the ingredients arrived, and I just couldn't believe how much butter he put in his risotto.
Yeah.
And he was like, right, now we put the butter in. I was like, are you sure? That much? You just stir it. That's why it's so tasty, isn't it?
So needy a risotto, though, isn't it?
God, yeah.
If you leave a risotto for 2 minutes, it's like, oh, I'm done, sorry, I'm burnt. Yeah. Like, you've got to be, like, right, you've got to be on it.
Yeah.
Needs a lot of attention.
It'd be perfect for tonight, though, wouldn't it, the risotto? This is just the sort of
perfect.
Weather.
Perfect, absolutely gorgeous, yeah.
But no, that's it, it's a whole evening of preparation. And it's you know,
it's an event.
It's a labour of love.
Will you be cooking at Christmas?
Yes, I will, yes.
Oh, what will you be cooking for the vegan and the vegetarian?
Well, it gets slightly more complicated because I'm taking my children to my parents' house in Liverpool, and, I mean, they are 89 and 88, respectively, and I will have to do something that fits the bill for everybody in a kitchen I don't really know, trying to keep my mother out of the way as best I can, which I fear will not be all that easy. Well, my dad makes ham-fisted interventions and the children just probably resort to strong drink by the time 10:30 rolls around. So I imagine if you can picture the scene at about 4:30 on Christmas afternoon, I will be bright red in the face, probably crying and trying to do something, whip up some magic with a vegan sausage wreath or something. I don't know.
Nothing says Christmas like a vegan sausage wreath.
No, literally nothing. That.
Will you do all the shopping here and take it up?
Well, that's a really good question, Will, and I don't want to get technical or bore people, but I did make a call earlier on to a restaurant in Liverpool, which is actually brilliantly supplying Christmas hampers for people in exactly my sort of situation.
Yeah.
So I just have to get there, pick it up, and then everything should be in the hamper. So I'll let you know how it goes.
If you could.
I think you should post a picture at midday on Christmas Day, just so everybody here knows that it turned out all right.
Well, the thing is, by the time Christmas Day rolls around, you know it will be all right, won't it? My heart starts to, basically, everything starts to lighten for me when the shops close on Christmas Eve, because then you can do no more. And you will manage with whatever you have to hand the next day. And it's only a bloody roast dinner.
Yes.
For God's sake.
That's
all it is. Get a grip, everybody.
My mum always gets very stressed. And this year I'm cooking for the first time and she keeps saying to me, she's like, oh, I'm very worried about your ham. And I'm like, I'm not. Don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. Well, it's just dinner.
She wants to meet my mother. They could have a conflab. Just how useless their daughters are.
But we had Angela Hartley on the podcast.
We did.
Who was saying that we don't do turkey this year. Do chicken, do two small chickens. And actually, I read Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall agree, you know, echoing that.
Well, I think the turkeys are very hard to get hold of, aren't they?
Because
they run very quickly.
So just do this two small chickens.
Two small chickens.
I'm escaping this year. So for the first time in 17 years, we're leaving the environment of Hackney in East London and going somewhere else for Christmas. And I don't have to cook Christmas lunch, which is the most weirdly liberating. I mean, we're still, what are we, a week and a bit away, but I haven't had to worry. James had to worry for a very long time about the hamper, the size of the kitchen, all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And it's actually the most extraordinary sense of release not to have that one meal, you know, hoving into view. It's astonishing how much we worry about it for then what it is. And, you know, hopefully, I don't know, does anybody in the room have people who genuinely would feel that their Christmas was terrible if the Christmas dinner wasn't perfect? I mean, I don't think people do really, do they?
I think if you have anyone like that in your life, cut them out.
Yes, very
just
much.
Make
well,
a decision now.
Exactly.
Say, look,
just get rid of them.
I appreciate you're my sister, but I don't think this is working out. I'll see you on Boxing Day.
But also, now I'm going to be a guest in someone's house. There's no way I'm going to complain if it's not.
Oh, great.
Yes, exactly. So why, you know, as the hostesses, we shouldn't be worrying so much ourselves.
Because my parents always used to cook and then plate up everything for everyone, like 16 around the table. And as a young boy, my job was to get my grandmother's, who always complained it was cold, and put it in the microwave for a minute. It's Susie's first Christmas, so...
I'm not one.
No, but it's your first Christmas hosting, isn't it?
Cheers.
So you seem very confident.
Well, I just think... Well, I just agree. I just think it's a roast dinner.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I'm very excited. It's the first time I've had a kitchen that's big enough to invite people round.
Yeah,
so it's very exciting. And I've got a toddler who is so confused about what Christmas is. It's very excited. I told her where we live, there's a windmill, and we go there sometimes to have a little walk around. And we went up there the other day, and it was closed. And I said, "Oh, it's closed because it's winter." That's why it's closed. It will open again in the summer. And she said, the winter's when Father Christmas comes. I said, yeah, yeah, yeah. And somehow in her little 2.5-year-old brain, she's now decided that Father Christmas lives in that windmill. So every time we go past, she's like, hi, Santa. But it is adorable. So I think that's why I'm excited. It's less about cooking for everyone and more about...
But because we all take ages to grow up now, I remember we only hosted our first Christmas 3 or 4 years ago. And I don't want to put them off. I was so stressed out about it. Oh, and I did a timetable of it. You know, you have to do a timetable of when everything's going to be ready.
And what's that fun for you, Will?
Because the wine is the easy part. Normally I just do the wine, just pull the cork. It was oh, this is delicious.
Yeah, we'll all be all right.
Can we open the final wine,
let's have the final wine. So I always think if you're trying to learn how to be a wine taster and identify those aromas, sweet wine is the easiest wine to start with because it has lots of primary flavours that we all recognise and love. We're in southwest France. We're going to Bordeaux, the world's largest fine wine region. And we're in Sauternes, and this makes arguably the greatest sweet wine in the world, this particular region. So we're about 25 miles from Bordeaux City. Mm-hmm. And just to get the technical bit out of the way, you make sweet wine like this. There's a river called the Cyrrol, which meets the Garonne, which is the tidal river. And it goes through a pine forest, and it cools down. And when those two rivers meet, you get these wonderful, picturesque, beautiful morning mists or fogs. Ever go to Sauternes in late August, September? It's an Instagram sort of absolute delight. It's the most beautiful wine region. So this fog hugs the vines and it makes the grape variety, which is Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon, it makes them rot and they get infected with something called noble rot or botrytis, which essentially does two things. It concentrates, it dries them out, so they have much more sugar. And it gives them much more of a complex, sweet character. So I always think, if you think about sweet wine, there's lots of sweet wine in the world. What Sauternes has as its signature is this complexity when you taste it, which can be anything. I mean, the great sweet wines, you can taste up to 18 different flavours, but you get this sort of unctuousness in the mouth.
It's mainly honey, this one, isn't it?
Yeah, honey is the big one.
What's the difference between just a dessert wine and an ice wine?
Well, ice wine is, its traditional home was in Germany, but poor old climate change has meant they can't get down to, they can't get the temperature low enough. So it's now mainly found in Canada. Ice wine is when you leave the grapes and they get encased in ice and then you pick them. And it has to be -8. And I always feel so sorry for the growers because most pickers, you pick your grapes in sort of, your grapes start growing in March and you pick them between August, September, October. And by late November, most winemakers are up on the Maldives on the beach. Whereas in Canada, they're having to look at the temperature every night. And when it goes down to -8, it has to be there for 4 hours. They then have to get their pickers and say, right, we're going out picking. Right. Which is normally about 4 o'clock in the morning. That's the coldest time of the evening. They go out with huge clubs on, secateurs, and they pick these grapes, which are covered in ice. And what that does is, if you ever have ice wine, which is lovely, it's different to this, it has very high acidity, which masks the sugar.
The sugar, yeah.
Now, what we should say about this is we are really treating you tonight because this not only comes from the greatest sweet wine area in the world, it comes from a very, I'm not allowed to say this publicly, but a very, very famous chateau there, which is arguably one of the great wines of the world. Mm. But it's some of the wine that wasn't quite good enough to go into their first wine. And so the Sunday Times Wine Club has acquired it and bottled it.
Ooh, and what do you think?
Well, I think it's extraordinary. I mean, it sticks to the side of the glass, doesn't it?
Mm.
It's like very, Jacob. Yeah, it's very viscous. Can I ask, and I don't want to be gender specific here, it may be a question that should concern men too, but is it highly, highly calorific because it's so
it's got a lot of
sweet.
Sugar. So what I would... don't know. Now, come on, I'm doing it off the top of my head, so please forgive me. But I think a can of Diet Coke has about 20 grams of residual sugar.
Diet normal Coke.
A normal Coke.
Yes,
sorry,
right.
Normal. Yeah. A Scotch whiskey actually has trace. So there's no sugar, although the ethanol has calories in. Mm. This will be Tokaj, which is the most sweet wine you can get, has about 225 grams. I think this is about 160 to 190 grams of residual sugar. So it's a lot of sugar.
So it is, isn't it?
But it's disguised, isn't it, by...
It is. I thought when they started to put calories on, it is on some wine labels, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that was quite informative. I mean, I don't think I'd ever really considered how much you're adding to your daily...
I completely agree.
Yeah.
I remember when I used to write to the Scotsman, and I said, if you ever want to get people to stop drinking, put the calories on wine, because a bottle of... You know, a good bottle of red wine is the same as having a Mars bar.
Yes. Well, exactly. So a friend of mine did say to me, a large glass of red wine is like having a donut. And it was what put her on track for slightly less drinking, actually. It was the idea that she was having three donuts whilst watching a decent box set of an evening. And it was damning for her.
You could look this up, right? I think this is right. I think there's less calories in a pint of Guinness than there are in a flute of champagne. So a glass of champagne has more calories than a pint of Guinness.
Wow, really?
That's extraordinary.
Switch to Guinness.
Have a Guinness lover. Get one down here.
Should do.
A huge round of applause, please, for Fee and Jane, our guests this evening.
That's it from us. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Wine Times in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club, produced by Anya Pierce, and the series producer is Ben Mitchell.
You can follow the podcast so you never miss an episode. Just do this via your favourite podcast app.
We'll be back next week with more delicious wine and another great guest.
Remember that all of the wines we tasted today are noted in the episode description, and you can get your hands on all of them from the Sunday Times Wine Club website.
From all of us, thank you very much for listening, and we hope to see you next week for more Wine Times.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.